Welcome everybody to a very special edition of the Hey 10 podcast. I'm PD Buckets. Find me on Twitter at PD Buckets, joined by my co-host Chris Pyle. Today we are going to preview the A10 tournament for you. We've got the pillow fight round starting tomorrow with Fordham playing GW at 11 a.m. I believe, and then LaSalle and St. Joe's at 2 p.m. Always our favorite place to start. Before we get into the games, Pyle, tell me, when was the last time you went to the A10 tournament? When was the last time you were actually there?
Last year.
There wasn't a tournament last year.
Exactly, but I was in the building when it got canceled.
Oh, that sucks. What was that like?
It was pretty eerie. Even just walking in, you were kind of basically walking into a game that you knew wasn't going to happen. Like, after all the news, after what happened, like, the previous day, you just knew, like, there's no way this is going to be played. And you were just waiting for the shoe to drop. And then, of course, it dropped, like, right before tip.
when the teams were on the court warming up, yeah. Yeah, I remember, and I think it's like it feels like a million years ago now, but it was only like this time last year. But yeah, it was so interesting because they had recently announced that they were going to hold the tournament, but they were going to hold it without fans. So I remember talking to the By George guys. Like, I didn't make the trip, but I remember talking to the By George guys and telling them, you know, write about what it's like to play in a big tournament center like Barclays with no fans or anything, just like the sounds, the noises, all the stuff you can hear. Does it feel weird? Like, tell me about that. That seems like a really interesting story. And, you know, fast forward to, you know, this time this year, and now it's just like the state of the world now. It's how sports are played in the United States at the moment. It's crazy.
Yeah. When I was there, I mean, the one thing that was kind of made it better was there were some fans. Like, I think they brought like some family and friends in there, because like at the time we were just like, okay, we're just gonna mitigate the spread. We really didn't know what, you know, how far this was gonna go. But also the VCU Peppas showed up, so that was really cool, and that felt like it was normal. Like, they were just jamming out, and that made it feel like a normal atmosphere, honestly.
Yeah.
But then after that, it was just like,
until everything went to hell.
Yeah, it was just the eeriest thing. I'll never forget it. Was just them, the PA announcer coming on, and saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, the A10 tournament has been canceled. Please drive home safely." That's it. Yeah. That was it. Like, there was nothing else. Like, it was the most eerie sentence of all time. I don't know.
Yeah, that's bizarre. Well, last tournament I went to was the one the year before that, where St. Louis upset everybody and won it in Barclays Center. I really hope to go next year when hopefully we have full attendance, full fans again. But in the meantime, let's jump into what we've got coming up tomorrow. Fordham GW. I don't want to spend a ton of time in the pillow fight round, but talk to me about Fordham GW. What are your initial thoughts here?
It's pretty funny that GW is playing Fordham for the second time this season, right after Fordham comes back from a COVID break. Mm-hmm. I find that really kind of interesting, but nonetheless, I mean, there's not much to say here. I think we're all thinking it. Fordham's going to be probably very rusty. We know it happened last time. GW won by like 25, I think. You know, and not to mention the spread here is GW minus 6. That just seems kind of bizarre, like the pillow fight lock of the century right there. So, yeah.
The lock is GW, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the same way. Yeah. George Washington stinks, but Fordham stinks way worse, and Fordham hasn't played in 3 weeks. What reason do we have to think that Fordham is going to be competitive in this game? GW blasted them coming off a layoff in the first meeting. I don't think there's much of a reason to think that changes. I think maybe people are a little scared because GW got annihilated by Bonaventure last game, like not even competitive, really. 88 to 41, holy shit. GW lost to Bonaventure 88-41 a couple days ago, but they were playing their third game in 5 days, and two of those games were on the road. So they played they came back. Sorry, they had a month off, and then when they came back, they played Rhodey on February 21st, they played Mason on February 24th, and then they played at Bonaventure or sorry, that was at Mason February 24th and at Bonaventure on Friday the 26th. So, like, to be off for a month and then just to have those three games in a row, two on the road, like, GW, they, you know, I don't think they're good, but I think they're a lot better than that Bonaventure showing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention, too. Like, they had to go and travel to George Mason and then turn around and just go right up to Olean. Like, mm-hmm. that was probably the most brutal stretch of scheduling I've seen, like, this season. And I know the A-10 has had a really tough time with scheduling and stuff, but, man, that's rough.
Yeah, Wednesday game in Fairfax, Friday game in Olean, and they lose by 47 points, so... I just don't think there's any reason at all to pick Fordham here. Maybe you might feel like GW sort of like quitting on the season a little bit. I don't know. That's one of the things that happens in the pillow fight round, you know, is like who actually wants to be there. It is one of the determining factors in how close the games are. You know, maybe if you want to like spin a narrative about GW kind of quitting and Fordham going to be happy about, you know, being able to play, maybe, but like I just don't see it at all. And it sounds like we're in agreement. GW minus six. I saw the over under at 126. Doesn't feel like a ton of value there. Anything you're looking at there?
I actually was going to take the under in that game. Even if GW scores a lot, like, Fordham is like the most abominable offense in the Atlantic 10. Mm-hmm. And that team coming off of a 3-week COVID pause, that's like, are they even going to get to like 40?
Yeah.
Like
with 120. Yeah. If Fordham doesn't get to 50 points, then you're looking at GW having to score 76 points around, which is sort of a tall order. So
yeah,
I can see under. Only thing is that Fordham has been faster under the interim coach. They're playing much closer to sort of like a league average pace under the interim guy. But then the other thing is GW has been slow in those three games since they came back. 66, 65, and 61 possessions for a team that had been playing very, very fast at the beginning of the year. So I think GW is slowing down a lot more than Fordham's speeding up. So I kind of like I like your take on under there. But I think, again, we didn't want to spend all this time on the pillow fight. Let's move on to LaSalle St. Joe's. Tell me, what are you looking at there?
Well, since Ryan Daly has come back, the St. Joe's Hawks have won three in a row, and it's pretty incredible. And honestly, like, Ryan Daly, I voted him as my super senior. He was my fun vote. And I know we weren't going to talk that much about it, but, that was just my one thing about Ryan Daly. But because these two teams are rivals, I think it's going to be a little closer. Mm-hmm. Both these teams were, even when Ryan Daly came back in that first game, like, LaSalle still kept it close. They probably should have won that game too. Even though Joe's has blown out their opponents, LaSalle's played them tough. You know, I mean, I personally think St. Joe's is going to win, but it'll be a lot closer than people think. Knowing that St. Joe's just completely obliterated Dayton and Richmond their past two games.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that LaSalle, this one's interesting because KenPom has this as St. Joe's by one. I think KenPom has it 77-76. And then the line is only St. Joe's minus two. And what that's saying is that, you know, KenPom doesn't know that Ryan Daly missed 10 games. So... Mm-hmm. You're only getting like 1 point of value for Ryan Daly not being baked into most of St. Joe's season so far. So that feels to me like you're getting some value there, because if you look at one of my favorite websites to go to for advanced stats analysis is BartTorvik.com, and he does game scores for teams that shows you, it sort of like normalizes how did a team shoot, how did they defend, and then gives you, you know, a game score to give you an idea of how they performed. And probably no surprise at all, St. Joe's is a tremendously shitty team all year. But the game scores for the games that they have daily are actually much, much higher than they are for the games that they don't have daily. And so that shouldn't be a surprise, because obviously he's their best player. He's one of the best players in the A-10. But it feels to me like you're only getting 1 point for him being back in the lineup. That, to me, feels like kind of a smash, because the other thing I wanted to point out is that St. Joe's played LaSalle, I think they played LaSalle earlier in the year without Ryan Daly, and they got sorry, I'm trying to pull up a screen here. They actually played that game pretty close, so they ended up losing by 7, but it was like the final score was 90-83, so just an absolute shitload of points. But that was like, I was watching that. That was, you know, that was a basketball game. LaSalle pulled ahead and was, you know, was ahead pretty decently most of the second half, but it never felt like LaSalle really put them away, you know, even though that was definitely not, you know, not the best lineup that St. Joseph's is capable of putting out there. So I kind of like, you know, I think in their first game back, St. Joe's won by 9 in overtime. In Daly's first game back, St. Joe's won by 9 in overtime. And then they've played just a whole lot better in the last two games. I kind of like St. Joe's to keep rolling. So I'm not as convinced that this one's going to be close.
Yeah, I mean, I like St. Joe's to win as well. I don't know. I just that Philly 5 basketball, you know, I don't know. That's just like the fan take in me. I mean, the analytical part is definitely like hammer St. Joe's. Like they should probably win by like 8 or 10. But just knowing how LaSalle can be kind of frisky, you know, I think it could be a little closer. But what is crazy is the total is 151, and yet in both games the total was 173 exactly. So I feel like the over is a huge hammer right here.
They annihilated it both games, but the thing is that second game they just played, that went to overtime. Right. It went to overtime, but even then it was 77 all at the end of regulation. So even then you still annihilate a 151 over under.
Yeah.
It's a lot of points, man. And it's you just don't know about shooting because both these teams take a ton of threes. And with shooting, it's tough. You know, at a new arena, they're going to be, you know, playing. They're both going to be at a neutral site in Richmond. So you just kind of like, it's a lot of points there. Goofy shit happens in the tournament. You know, one team clanks everything, can't make anything, who knows. But then LaSalle was also 3 of 26 from 3 last time they met and still put up 82 points, so who knows. But no, I like that one. All right, let's get out of the pillow fight round because that's the, you know, it's fun for A-10 fans, but I think we got definitely some other stuff to discuss. Yeah. Let's move into Richmond Duquesne. I don't think we have a line on Richmond Duquesne yet. But if we go to KenPom,
it's KenPom, -8.
KenPom has this as Richmond by 8, which seems, well, I'll get to my thoughts in a minute. Why don't 75-67, which tells us about 142 in points, which seems high. I would bet the over-under comes in a little lower. I would also bet Richmond's not going to be favored by 8, probably closer to 5 or 6. Why don't you start? Give me your thoughts here.
First off, Duquesne plays teams very well the second time around. You saw it against Rhode Island the second game they won. The second game against Dayton, they annihilated them. Even against St. Bonaventure, even though it was like a 3 or 2 point loss, that was still better than the first game. So
4 points, yeah.
Yeah. So even though Duquesne is, you know, they lost to Richmond by 7, I think. I think Duquesne will learn a lot. I think Keith Danbrot is a very good adjustments coach, and I think he's going to have his guys ready to play. Marcus Weathers has been really hot lately. He's been basically carrying the load on this team. Even though he only had 12 points in the last game, he's just getting better and better, and he's hot right now. And honestly, I kind of like Duquesne with the upset alert. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. One big problem here, sort of the elephant in the room, is that Richmond is not healthy at all. Grant Golden has this like contraption on his hand. I think he's like, his hand is not good, and he's definitely been much less effective than we're used to seeing him. And now suddenly Blake Francis is having back issues. I'm not sure if you saw that report from Noah Goldberg, friend of the pod, good buddy of ours. But you know, Francis, like Blake Francis having back issues is not a good sign at all. Richmond is, if you watch the end of that St. Joe's game where Richmond just took an absolutely devastating, embarrassing loss to St. Joe's on senior night, which just like can't happen. Especially not senior night for like Blake Francis, Jacob Gilliard, and Grant Golden. Like that should never happen. Like those guys, like those are guys who win on their senior night, you know, but to take like that loss in that spot when you're on the bubble is just like unconscionable. But anyway, it's because Grant Golden was not himself, and he actually wasn't even playing down the stretch. Matt Grace, who is their backup five and is like, you know, seems like a nice guy, but he's just not nearly the player that Grant Golden is, he had to take those minutes. And that really, really hurts Richmond. If Grant Golden is not himself against that front line of Marcus Weathers and Marcus Weathers and Michael Hughes, right? I always get it mixed up. Marcus Weathers yeah. and Michael Hughes. Yeah, I got it right. Then like the Dukes might grab every rebound. Duquesne was up with like 5 minutes left with a fully healthy Richmond the last time that they played. They ended up losing by 7, I think. But there are some strong matchups for Duquesne here. Michael Hughes went 9 for 15 in the first matchup with Golden playing 31 minutes. If Golden is limited or if he doesn't get a lot of minutes, like, he's eating again because Matt Grace absolutely is not going to be able to guard him. Dukes grabbed 11 offensive rebounds to Richmond's 4. Spidey won that game with absurd shooting. They were like 18 of 26 from 2 and 9 of 23 from 3. I wouldn't necessarily expect a repeat of that. I think, like you said, Dan Brott's a really good coach. I think they'll defend a lot better next time. I also, like, I'm a little bit leery of how much we're agreeing here because I also think this is a good spot for a Duquesne money line play, particularly if the spread is like 5 or 6 points like that.
Yeah. Dukes plus 8. Is really juicy, but yeah, money line value might be pretty good when it comes out. But like you said, if Grant Golden is not his usual self, you know, Richmond's probably going to have to resort to shooting threes. And what does Duquesne do really well is defend the perimeter. So like this could, like, you're right, this could get out of hand if they don't have Francis or normal Golden.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think part of the reason that Spidey killed him inside last time is because the Dukes, their defensive scheme is they do overextend on the perimeter. So, you know, the Spiders kind of dice them inside in the first game. I'm thinking maybe that tends to point us to a little bit of an overplay because Richmond's going to kill him with backdoor cuts. Also, remember, this is going to be something of a home game for Richmond. I forget if it's in the Siegel Center or if it's in the Robin Center. But it is going to be in the city of Richmond, which I think is a little bit of an advantage. But I don't know how much that matters if the Spiders aren't healthy.
Yeah, this one is in the Siegel Center.
Siegel Center, yeah. So still either way, just, you know, a lot less travel. And again, overall, the Spiders, they've just been lacking. They just look like they're missing something since they came back from COVID. Losses to St. Louis. Lost to St. Joseph, lost to VCU, with the only wins coming over Duquesne and UMass since they came back. So I think that's, I think that we're sort of, we seem pretty well in agreement there. Any argument for Richmond?
Gilliard's been playing well lately, and so has Nathan Kayo. He's been very underrated, and I know we talk about like the big three of Gilliard, Francis, and Golden, but Kayo's been very good lately. I wouldn't be surprised if he came out and, you know, put up somewhere near 20 points or whatever have you, especially if Grant's not himself, like you said, or if Francis is not 100% or if he's out. So he could be a real big X factor in that one.
Yeah, he could. And I think the KO is like, you know, he doesn't shoot threes at all, so he scores 2 points at a time, basically, unless he gets fouled. And that's going to be, you know, that's just going to be a little bit tough. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, he was 4 of 7 in that first game against Duquesne. Overall, all of the Spiders shot pretty well in that first game. So I would bet, I think he made a good point about Dan Brott. I think they probably defend a little better in the second game. Mm-hmm. But then let's move on to the second defined game that we have that we know the participants, Dayton and Rhode Island. I love this because these are the two most schizophrenic teams we've seen all year. Which team is better at being Rhode Island, Dayton or Rhode Island? We're going to find out. I guess I'll start here. I think the prevailing story is that Dayton won game one pretty decisively, and they were up by like 18 in game two. But then whatever you want to say happened, either they fell asleep or game two was senior night in Rhode Island. It was Fats' senior night, so they came storming back. I don't really have much doubt that Dayton's actually the better team. They're just not that much more trustworthy than Rhode Island at all. And Dayton obviously is coming off the big win against St. Bonaventure, where it sure looks like they've finally gotten their shit together. So I think I'm leaning Dayton, but tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, just when you let Dayton, when you start believing in Dayton again, that's when they go ahead and lose to St. Joe's. So
you're a Dayton fan, so you know as well as anyone. Yeah.
This is like the soup sandwich bowl. Like, it's so weird. Have you ever heard that term, a soup sandwich?
Yeah.
We say it all the time.
Remind me, what's it mean?
So basically, like, take two pieces of bread and then pour soup in it and put it together. It's just a mess, you know? So.
Okay. There's not like a deeper metaphor there.
Nope. Got it. Nope. There. It's literally what it means. This is a soup sandwich bowl. But because both these teams are just so weird and they're so untrustworthy. But I mean, you're right. Dayton's the better team. I do think that since Chapman has come back, and I know they've lost some games they shouldn't have, especially last game, I think they kind of put it all together with Chapman being like the primary defender.
Their ceiling is so much higher with Chapman on the floor.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that can make, and that was like their best defensive performance of the season against the number one team in the A-10. And I think Rhodey is like a poor man's Bonna. Like, they play pretty good defense, but the offense isn't that great. So I think Dayton kind of learned their lesson the first time. I think they just kind of like, I don't know, from my perspective, they just kind of thought they had that game wrapped up. And in this league, and especially with, you know, with all the craziness that has gone on this year, like, you just can't have that happen anymore. Plus, now they're getting, like, significant contributions from RJ Blakeney, Zimi Wilkeji, Mustafa Amsil. Like, all those guys are giving them a lot more minutes. And remember, Crutcher fouled out in that Bonaventure game. I thought it was over. But RJ Blakeney stepped up. So I really think that Dayton is kind of starting to put it together. Their freshmen have kind of graduated into like more mature freshmen. And Rhodey really hasn't shown anything since that game. They've lost to GW. They've lost to, Duquesne, right? Yeah. So like their only win, isn't that like Dayton's probably their only win in their past like seven games, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, they're 1-6 in their past seven games. That's right.
Yeah.
And they were also 3-2 in conference at one point. So since they lost that first UMass game, their only wins are George Mason, Fordham, LaSalle, and then that Dayton game in double overtime. Yeah. So they do not look good. They even lost to like the GW team that I just think is really crappy. a week or two ago. When I was looking through the box scores, one thing that sort of jumped out was that in game two, both teams shot like shit. Yeah, 5-for-26 from three for Dayton, 7-for-26 from three for Rhodey. But there were 50 total fouls in this game and 75 total free throws. I feel like that's just a weird, choppy result that isn't necessarily. That's the sort of thing that you would not expect to happen the second time these teams meet. So I feel like in that sense, game one was a lot more instructive in terms of what things are going to look like when these teams play each other. But game two is not, just due to the fouling, you know, fat senior nights. So usually get a really good effort from, you know, guys up and down the bench on senior night. And then Dayton going up big and then just thinking they were kicking it into cruise control and then getting outscored like 31-13 in the last 10 minutes of regulation. Also, Jeremy Shepard had a big game against Dayton in game two, and it just broke today that he's not even going to be available for this game. I think he's got an injury. I'm like, I don't know, this feels like famous last words, but I feel like I'm pretty comfortably settling on the Dayton side here.
You mentioned that last game with the free throws. Like, that's a Fats game right there, baby. Yep. Like, he's going to go to the free throw line. He's going to get 20 points a game. He's going to get 20 points in the game, and half of them are going to come from, more than half are going to come from the free throw line.
He's going to shoot. He shot 4 of 17 from the field, didn't hit a three-pointer, and scored 20 points because he was 12 of 16 from the line. And, yeah, like, he'll get those, you know, he'll get those calls at home. Both teams actually shot. It wasn't one-sided. Rhode Island shot 38 free throws. Dayton shot 37. Yeah. So it was just, like, foul palooza. I don't know. I don't want to beat a dead horse there. I just don't think that's going to – it's super, like, low probability result. And then Dayton matches up well with Rhodey because Dayton's elite at keeping teams out of the middle, and you can really bother Rhode Island if you can keep them out of the middle and bait them into taking bad jumpers, because like all of their guards are shoot first guards, so if they have an excuse to take a contested jumper, like, they'll take it. And I think that's how Dayton's gonna play them.
Yeah. So
any final thoughts there?
The line, KenPom has Dayton as a 1-point winner, and if the line is somewhere around Dayton minus 2, I'm guessing, I would probably hammer Dayton on that one.
Yeah, you would go up to Dayton minus 2, huh?
Well, no, probably more than that, but like I was saying, like, I don't know if KenPom's going to, I don't know if the line's actually going to be Dayton minus 1, but somewhere around, you know, like, maybe... I'd want to say my limit would be Dayton minus 5.5, just because they are just the wackiest team, and and you know, and you can only give a Dayton team with an advantage so much leeway, because they will just disappoint you to a core.
Yeah. Yep. So I think those are the. That wraps up the games where we know the participants. So for the top 6 seeds here, what we're going to do is I think we're just going to talk through like sort of your thoughts about their path, how the back bracket broke for them, like matchups you're looking for, recent developments, anything like that. And we'll just count them down right in order, starting with number 6, my beloved George Mason Patriots. I have all sorts of thoughts about the Patriots. From an outsider perspective, tell me how do you like their chances at making a run?
They probably got the best draw they could have hoped for, right? Out of the top four.
It's the easy side of the bracket for sure.
Yeah, I call that like the sleepy side of the bracket. It seems like so forgotten. Like you just it's like Davidson is down there with George Mason and GW and four, like it's just it's a bunch of teams that like I feel like we could forget about easily, but yeah, especially since George Mason is on the side with VCU, a team that they beat, and we don't know how healthy VCU is with Williams and Highland as of right now. So, but you know who does have their number is the Dayton Flyers. So if Dayton somehow gets there, or even Rhode Island, like Rhode Island played George Mason really well. Like, I don't know. I like George Mason's draw for just getting Davidson, but I don't know if they can beat Davidson, you know. But if you're a Mason fan, I feel like you're happy with the draw and happy you did not get the VCU St. Louis or St. Bonaventure side.
Yeah, I don't really think Mason matches up well at all with the with Davidson. I know some Mason fans are concerned about GW because GW's they swept us last year, and we just beat them coming off only one game off of their paws. I lost a lot of respect for GW after Mason stuck Tyler Kolek on Jamison Battle down the stretch to neutralize him. Kolek is like at least 5 inches shorter, maybe 6, and Battle just does not have an inside game. So if you can like run around with him on the perimeter, you can do a pretty good job of defending him. And they also murdered GW on the boards, 23-4 offensive rebounding. The only reason it was even close is because they just shot like absolute ass. I think that Mason wins comfortably if they meet again. And again, that's if I'm assuming that GW is going to pound Fordham in the first play-in game. So then going to, you know, I don't know. This is like Mason could obviously lose to GW, but it would be because like they play a D-minus game or because Battle does something silly like goes 8 of 10 from 3 or something like that. I think in a sort of like a straight up game where both teams play at about their level, Mason is going to win that game by 8 or 10 points. What I think is that Mason does not match up well at all with who they would get next. Davidson. Davidson's super high IQ, bleed the clock, keep you off the boards, and they shoot really well, which Mason struggles against. Also concerned about Bob McKillop's ability to game plan. If he takes away Josh Oduro, and he probably will, Mason's going to have to rely on shooting from Tyler Kolek, Jordan Miller, Javon Green, which is just really dicey. Shooting is better this year overall, but if you watch this Mason team, they don't like, I don't know, they don't beat you by shooting threes, which like feels weird to say, but it's like if you watch Mason, it, you know, it's true. Like they don't really shoot teams out of games, not really how they win. So that's sort of what I think. I have a really hard time seeing Mason getting past that Davidson matchup.
Yeah, I kind of do too. I don't have them moving on past them, but my point though was, you know, if you could choose your top four opponents, who would you want? I mean, maybe VCU, but do you want to play with that again? Like, I mean, I mean Mason played an amazing game that game, but like, do you want Davidson, who, like, I don't know, it can be beaten, you know, whereas the top was St. Louis, St. Bonaventure, yeah, and VCU are like so much, you know, they're definitely like the top three in the conference, you know.
No, I definitely agree with that. Mason's matchups against like St. Louis and Bonaventure are absolutely awful. I think they lose both of those games by like 20 plus if they meet again. Totally agree with you there. I definitely, like, you know, we actually have good matchups against VCU. And Davidson, as far as three seeds go, like, they're, you know, fairly weak, I think is fair to say, even though, like, they, you know, deserve the three seed the way that the season played out. Like, Davidson's by no means unbeatable. Just saying, like, from a matchup perspective, it's also, like, feels like that's probably where the road's going to end.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I think that's Mason. Let's move on to UMass. Tell me, what are your thoughts on this UMass team?
They can beat nobody that is above them, like in the power rankings, or, you know, like, cause I consider them, and I think us at A10 Talk consider them about the seventh or like eighth best team. They can't beat anyone above that. They get absolutely hammered by anyone they play that's remotely better than them. But, and you know, it's kind of, for the most part, they're going to beat the teams below them, but you know, there was that George Mason game too. And I think they're kind of a little bit even. So, they're kind of lucky to be in that five seed, but that's only a number only and not in opponent. Cause they could potentially walk into a St. Joe's team, which no pillow fight team has made it past Thursday in this format of the A10 tournament since it got created in 2014. So they have that history going for them. However, this is a COVID year, and this might be the year that it could happen, especially if they play St. Joe's. But if they got past that, like, it would be a miracle if they beat St. Louis again.
So that's still true. No pillow fight team has ever won a second game.
Yeah, I looked it up.
Wow, that's I would not have expected that, but I suppose it makes sense. I think in years past, it's like, you knew exactly who everybody was coming into the tournament, right? And yeah, now there's just, teams didn't get so many games. They didn't get a real out of conference schedule. You just don't know. So I think there's just so much more uncertainty. From UMass's perspective, I can see them like losing to St. Joe's or LaSalle, whoever comes out of that game. And then I can also see them beating St. Louis. Because they matched up pretty well with St. Louis last year. They just had this, played that game against St. Louis where they just like weren't competitive from the opening whistle. But in last year's matchups with St. Louis, they won one game by four in regulation and then lost another game in overtime. So I think St. Louis playing at home on senior night with UMass sort of coming off of a weird, you know, COVID pause. I think that was I don't necessarily know if that's going to be more like indicative of how these teams match up versus what we actually saw out of them last year. I think they will probably have problems with Trey Mitchell, potentially. I think Mitchell matches up well against St. Louis. I would sort of see that being potentially the end of the road for UMass if they did get past them, because I think like Bonaventure, their likely opponent out of that, would be a lot more difficult. But I kind of agree. UMass is like one of the most Jekyll and Hyde teams that we've seen. They feel like there's just been something missing all year. Like they haven't quite hit their ceiling based on the talent that they put onto the floor. I don't know if you even think that they would like be able to give St. Louis a game.
I don't, and I was thinking they would, looking at all the projections of like all the different of where everything could end up on Monday night based off of results, and I was like, oh, you know, UMass might want at the fifth seed. They might get St. Louis, and we'll see tonight. They haven't beaten anyone good, so I can't trust them. Like, you know, all the other teams that we can't trust, aka Dayton and Rhode Island, they've at least beaten teams that are good.
Yeah. Yep, that's right. UMass even lost that double OT game to Mason earlier this year. Yeah, so I think we're in the same spot on UMass, just not quite maximizing all the talent that they rolled out onto the floor at this point. Not really, like, not a team that I think is going to make a run. So moving on to their likely opponent, if they are able to uphold the tradition of not losing to a pillow fighter, they would get St. Louis. St. Louis, in my opinion, still has the highest ceiling of any team in conference. I am still of the opinion that they just had the COVID layoff from hell and they just haven't looked right since then. If they start clicking, look out below, because I think they're absolutely, you know, the best team in conference when they're playing their A game. So I know a lot of people are picking them to make a deep run in the tournament, because they do have that enticing matchup with Bonaventure, who they match up really well with if they get past UMass or whoever they play in the first round, So tell me, what do you think we're seeing from St. Louis?
I think they got the best path to a tournament championship out of anyone in the league. Because, I mean, like we talked about, they play UMass. They match up very well against St. Bonaventure. You know, who knows what they get out of the other side, but they do match up well with VCU. You know, I'd be surprised if Dayton beat them for a third time. You know, they match up well with Davidson, I think. And like you said, like this team, when they're clicking, like what we saw in the non-con with them, like they're unstoppable. And I really think, you know, if there's a time for them to show like that they are still that juggernaut team, it's right now. And I think they got a great shot to do it.
Yeah. One thing that I'm looking at for St. Louis is I've got the second half in that first game that St. Louis plays circled. And the reason is that they are either going to get, it's going to be a legs play, because they're either going to get St. Joe's or LaSalle, who's going to be playing their third game in 3 days, or they're going to be playing UMass on their second game in 2 days. But UMass just came off a 17-day break, remember. They were off from February 6th to February 23rd. They came back against Richmond. They lost. They just lost, you know, a week later at St. Louis. Now they've got a couple days off before they play again, and then they're going to be on their second game in 2 days. So I think if you see UMass St. Louis, I think that UMass might be able to keep it competitive for a half, but then you have to wonder about conditioning and how that's going to affect them, particularly for a team that's like, you know, playing against a team that's big and physical and just sort of pounds you, grinds you down like St. Louis. I think that looking at St. Louis, betting on St. Louis in the second half of whatever game they're playing feels like it's fairly sharp to me.
Yeah, I kind of disagree. I just don't think UMass is, I mean, I like the UMass team. I just think they don't really match up well with St. Louis to me. They do with Trey Mitchell, but that's about it. And I think we proved that on Monday night.
So yeah, so you don't think of anything for the of the two games from last year?
Nah, it's in the past. They're two different, completely different squads. You know, St. Louis got a shit ton better. UMass kind of got better, but really just kind of stayed the same, in my opinion. So and that's kind of what we saw on Monday, a team that grew and one that kind of stayed the same.
Yeah. Yeah, totally fair. But you would agree with that St. Louis second half play, though?
Yeah, I could see it. They've done it a couple times this year where they've kind of faltered on the stretch a little bit because they've been up big, like they did against Rhode Island. Even against Fordham, they just kind of relaxed. But again, that's Fordham. But still, I think the Rhode Island game, I didn't think Rhode Island had a chance to win that game, but they still made it interesting. So yeah, St. Louis can kind of fall asleep a little bit near the end.
Yeah, no, sorry, I'm saying I would bet on St. Louis in the second half. I think that's maybe.
Oh shit! I'm sorry, I completely missed. I was looking at something at the same time. You might just want to edit that out. Just pile out a poopy blunder there.
We might keep it in there. All of this might make it in there. But no, sorry. So the play that I'm thinking is like there. St. Louis is going to be playing a team with dead legs in the second half, regardless of like who it is. Right? It's either Joe's or St. Louis or Joe's or LaSalle on their third game in 3 days, or UMass on their second game in 2 days, but also recently coming off a layoff, which we know these layoffs, they don't just impact the first day back. They can linger in terms of the effect that they have. That's what we're seeing this year. So. Something I'll be looking at. But then also in terms of matchups, St. Louis is the only team that made Bonaventure look not competitive this year. So assuming they do get out of that first round, they move on to St. Bonaventure, who they beat by 11 points. They beat the shit out of Bonaventure last year. They like absolutely have a very clear path to the A-10 title game. I think we're both like, as a 4 seed, I would not be surprised at all to see St. Louis win this. And St. Louis is really the first team that we've talked about where I would say like I can totally see them winning the tournament, because I really think it's between St. Louis, Bonaventure, and VCU for me. We're getting to – so let's move on to Davidson. Davidson's number 3. I said earlier feels a little bit like a weaker 3 seed, and I know like if Davidson fans are listening, it's like nothing personal. It's just your team's not like, you know, scary this year. You've lost to most of the higher level competition that you've played in conference, with the exception of the VCU game, except VCU is just missing Bones Island because of his foot issue. So their other wins in conference are against Rhodey, Duquesne, St. Joe's, LaSalle, Fordham, and UMass, which are all like middle of the pack or bad teams. So I think that part of the reason that this feels like the easy side of the bracket is because Davidson is the 3 seed. I don't see much of a threat for them from Mason or from whoever wins the 11-14 game if that team moves past Mason. But again, Davidson does feel weaker than a typical 3 seed. Tell me, what are you thinking? What are you expecting out of them?
Well, I think they got the second best draw behind St. Louis, and that's only because they have a really good path to Saturday. But after that, I think they got 3 really tough opponents that could play really good defense against them, especially if Bones comes back for VCU. But Davidson, I feel like we were all very not high on them at all, and I think it's very fair that they were a top 4 team. Obviously 3 may be a stretch, they were more like a 4. But I don't know, they're an interesting team. If they get Dayton or VCU or Rhode Island, I think they are good enough to beat those teams, but I don't know if they necessarily will. So that's why I think like after Saturday and beyond, it might be really tough for them to get to Sunday, depending on who they play.
Yeah, I think the lack of bench production for them makes a deep run tough. Michael Jones and Grant Huffman have been coming on a little bit recently, but overall they're just so dependent on their starting lineup, and I'm sure it's something we're going to talk about when we get to Bonna. Kellen Grady can absolutely play like the best player on the floor against anyone, and then Hyun Jung Lee's shooting makes them a really tough out. He's really such a tremendously fantastic shooter. So it wouldn't be like the most surprising thing in the world to see them spring an upset or two. I just think that when you look at their resume this year, it's like they lose to the good teams they play for the most part. And I don't know if that's even fair necessarily, because this team is like just two possessions away from being in the at-large discussion between that Texas game and that Providence game earlier this year. And then the one possession loss to Bonaventure as well. But I don't know. They're just not scary, you know. They've got that incredibly soft interior defense. They allow teams to get to the rim pretty well. They don't defend at the rim particularly well. You need to be able to generate stops to get, you know, to win a tournament like this, and they just don't get stops well enough, and that's the big concern with them.
Yeah, I think their team has gotten better as the season's come along, but I also think they've gotten very lucky with how the seeding worked out, how their schedule worked out. The injuries that came about to the good teams they played, and they're kind of like a richer version of UMass in a way that they kind of look like Mirage. They kind of look like a Mirage, but they do have some good pieces that can win games. But I have a hard time finding them past Saturday.
Yeah, we'll see. I think, you know, we move on to VCU here on the number two side, and I think that this is sort of like, this is the other side of the coin, because for me, Davidson could absolutely wind up in the championship game if VCU's not healthy. Bones hasn't played the last couple of games, and then Vince Williams left the end of the Davidson game because he twisted his ankle. So if those guys aren't 100%, VCU does not have anybody who can score reliably without Bones or Williams. It's like VCU is offensively challenged in the first place. Even when they're fully healthy, it's the scoring points has prevented them from becoming an elite team. I feel like Davidson made VCU look like they should look when they don't have Bones in that game, because they just sort of like they dropped under every ball screen for Ace. They didn't give shooters much space. They were able to collapse in the paint. If VCU is not healthy again, I think Davidson has a really good like game plan and blueprint to really give them a lot of trouble. If VCU is fully healthy, I would expect them to beat Davidson pretty comfortably. It's just like, it's just such a, it's just like these things are tough to know at this point in the conference season. Like, does VCU, do they think that they need to beat Davidson in order to secure an at-large bid? Are they going to roll Bones out there, even if he's like only 80-85% instead of 100%? I think those are the big questions with VCU, and I think we're sort of like blending the VCU and Davidson conversation at this point. But give me your thoughts on VCU.
I mean, you said it all right there. If they're healthy, I think they're one of the favorites along with St. Louis and St. Bonaventure. If they're not, they might have a hard time making it out of Friday. And that's because they're playing a Rhode Island team that's had their number, that they barely beat this year, that kind of got off the schneid. But they're also going to play a Dayton team who is their biggest rival. And now a Dayton team that has Rodney Chapman back. They're getting a lot more contributions for other guys. The second game was a lot more competitive than the first game. VCU just found their offensive stroke. So, like you said, if there's no offense, I think both Dayton and Rhode Island can beat them on Friday. So, and then from there, you know, it's just house money, right? So, Bones. VCU is really, really interesting team to look out for right now.
Yeah, for VCU, Bones averages over 19 points a game. Vince Williams averages about 11 points a game. Nobody else over 7 points, Jameer Watkins, 7.3 points a game. Then a bunch of guys at like 6 points and 5 points. So team contributions all the way down, but no real bucket getters outside of Bones. And even Vince Williams, he's not great from two. Like, he's not great inside in the paint. He's a great shooter. He shoots 42% from three. Which is great. He's VCU's second shooter, basically. But they just don't have bucket getters if those guys aren't healthy. So they're going to go from a team that can probably still defend pretty well, but absolutely cannot score. And it's going to be really tough for them to win games that way. And I absolutely agree with you. They could lose to any of the three teams that they could get matched up with in the first round. Three teams. They could only two teams, the winner, Dayton and Rhodite. Yeah. So they could absolutely absolutely lose to either Dayton or Rhode Island in the first round if they're not fully healthy. I think that's sort of like the entire story is like we just need to monitor before we're going to tell you like how to bet this. If we feel like they're fully healthy, I think I'm pretty comfortable they advance. If we don't feel like they're healthy, I think they're in serious trouble. And I think it just totally depends on can Bones go? Is Bones 100%? Can Vince go? Is Vince 100%? So, awesome. That's VCU. Any final thoughts there?
None really, except they've had bad luck in this tournament, right? They're the game last year that gets canceled on, and then the year before they lose Marcus Evans against Rhode Island in the first round. So yeah, this team has a lot of bad luck in this tournament, or at least coming into it.
yep, absolutely. Moving on, let's wrap this up with St. Bonaventure. I feel like most people do. Bonaventure just got absolutely boned by how this bracket broke. They're going to have three super tough games to make it to a championship. I think Duquesne and Richmond both played them close earlier this year. Then that's who they're going to get out of the 8-9 game. And then St. Louis is the one single team that they don't want to see in the tournament at all, that they would get potentially in the second round. So... give me your thoughts on St. Bonaventure there. Realistically, what are their chances of coming home with the title?
Okay, so first of all, only 19 regular season champions out of the 43 tournaments that have been played have won the A-10 tournament. So odds in history are not on their side as a one seed. Plus, the one seed hasn't won it since 2013, and that was St. Louis. But I think... many people are looking, St. Louis and St. Bonaventure in that semifinal game. Okay, we need to talk about Duquesne, because I think we both agree Duquesne can pull off the upset against Richmond, especially with the Spiders injuries and whatnot. But like we talked about, Duquesne is a very good team in their second and now potentially third game. So, and the last tournament, like we saw, the one seed got out in... as a result of playing the 9-8 matchup. So, I really think they could get upset on Friday. However, they are a good team. They're very experienced. I think they kind of, I don't even know what to call it on Monday, but they kind of just slept into that game because they already had the one seed and the regular season title wrapped up. So it just seemed like they were not themselves, and they could have played a lot better against a Dayton team that didn't have their best player on the floor.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts?
So the interesting thing about Bonaventure has a couple of things that are really going to hurt them. First is that we all know that they have the short bench. Like, they basically don't have a bench, right? They play, they play five guys. The bench guys get like incredibly limited minutes. I think Alejandro Vasquez, I'm looking at KenPom, has played about 34% of minutes this year. Jalen Shaw has played about 14% of minutes. They don't really have a bench at all. They roll with their five starters. When you get to games two and three against really good teams, that hurts. The second thing that hurts them is that this is not a great shooting team. They're pretty good from three, but from two, they're actually one of the bottom 100, not quite bottom 100, but bottom 100-ish in range in the NCAA. So they are, they're a fantastic offensive rebounding team, top 40 in the country. It's one of the things, and they don't turn the ball over, which is one of the things that, helps their offensive numbers look a lot better. But overall, not a great shooting team. And Duquesne, I think, Duquesne matches up a little bit with that. I mean, I like Duquesne. I'm talking them up. I would be skeptical that, like, they're actually going to beat Bonaventure, but still, that's would be, like, a kind of a bitch of a first game to play. And then they're going to play St. Louis, who, like, we've already covered the matchup, which is just going to be really, really difficult for them. And then if they do get past St. Louis, Then they've got who probably VCU, who they split with this year, or Davidson, who just played them tough, really tough twice. I don't know. I don't believe in the stuff that like the one seed, like it's not good to be the one seed or whatever. I don't believe in that, but I just think that Bonaventure has so many bad matchups that they're going to run into in the first game, in the first two games, even before they get to potentially the championship game, where their guys are just going to be tired because it's going to be the same five guys playing the third game in 3 days, and they don't have a bench to speak of that's going to make things any easier for them. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, Bonaventure, definitely one of the three teams I feel like that could win it, but just not really, like, super confident about their chances.
Yeah, and you talk about their bench, like not having a bench, right? And the conditioning after a couple days and playing these gauntlet of teams like Duquesne and Saint, they're kind of very similar teams and very similar styles. When teams are getting tired, they end up creating silly fouls and stuff like that. And what happens? Well, then Osun gets in foul trouble, and then they're absolutely screwed. Like, I think we've covered this many times this year. Like, if Osun's not on the floor for them, they're kind of screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even Lofton, man. Like, any of their players gets two fouls, then they're suddenly starting, like, suddenly Alejandro Vasquez is getting a lot of minutes, right? Which is not good for them. I think that's, I think that's, like, unfortunate for them, but it's sort of like, it is who they are at the moment. And it's a good call out because they're also extremely susceptible to foul trouble. And it just feels like, I feel like their starting five is like a top 15 team. Their starting five is such a good unit, but when you only have those five guys you can rely on, you're just navigating landmines this entire time. And it's just so, like, the amount of ways that they can win and they can beat you, it's just narrowed down. We're evaluating them in the context of the one seed. Like, usually you feel like the one seed should be the favorite. I don't know if I would have them favored over, like, St. Louis to actually win the tournament. I feel like if I could get better odds on St. Louis to win the tournament, I might snap that up instead.
You know, I'm looking at the bracket right now, and, you know, you kind of just have to look at it just to see, even though you know what the seeds are. Like, I could list them off, but you got to look at the matchups and whatnot. I feel like St. Bonaventure had, like, they're like the trickle-down effect to how, like, the COVID pauses affected UMass, right? Because I don't think UMass would be in that position, and they'd probably be in that 8-9 matchup. But since they had the pauses, they got games canceled, and including Davidson too, because we don't know how the rest of their conference season would have shaped out. They could have gotten a couple more losses and dropped down too. So, and not saying that they would have dropped 8-9, but UMass definitely could have dropped there. And instead, Bonaventure gets the winner of, two pretty decent teams in Richmond and Duquesne. So they're kind of the one that gets on with this moving on and whatnot.
I think I totally get what you're saying. Like, UMass and Mason would feel more correct as like the 8-9 game, and Richmond Duquesne as the 5-6 seeds.
Yep.
That would feel more like what things should be like than the current status of like Mason and UMass being 5-6. And like unlikely at all to play Bonaventure. And then two teams that can be pretty good when they're playing their A game, that Bonaventure is going to have to deal with in the 8-9 game. So, yeah, I think we're even there. We're right about an hour. I'd love to keep this at an hour. Any final thoughts you want to talk about? Anything you want to drop in for your A-10 tournament preview here, Pyle?
Just look out for the best bets. And I do have something. We didn't cover it during pillow fights because we want to move on, but I'm gonna nail it right now. All right. Here is your official pillow fight parlay.
can we get Brian to put a sound effect in there?
Yes, do it, Brian. Oh, yeah. Please. All right. Pillow fight parlay. Dun 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 dun.
What is Joe, the pillow fight parlay?
Joe's -2. Mm-hmm. GW -6, and GW Fordham under 126.
All right.
Nail it. Write it down. Go buy your wife a brand new purse. Like, don't save the receipt because this is hitting.
Yep. Awesome. That's your pillow fight parlay. I love it. Parlay Pyle back on his bullshit. Have a happy A10 tournament, everybody. We might come back here. We might drop like a hey 10 minutes in here at some point to I cap like some it. Of the action or to see some of the games. But this is the big mega podcast. If you're still listening, if you listen to this whole thing, God bless you. Thank you. We love you. have a great A10 tournament.
Let's get weird.
Let's get weird. I got something.